Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for listening. Good episode today. We have Don Van Natta from ESPN on the show to talk about a new ESPN sort of documentary that is airing this Sunday on LeBron James and the decision. It's called Backstory, The Decision, and investigates everything that went into the LeBron James ESPN collaboration where he announced he was leaving the Cavs for the Heat. Don Van Natta is the host and the reporter on it, and really enjoyed talking to him about it. We also talked about other things, sort of the state of the sports world with Corona going crazy everywhere, and a little bit about Bubba Wallace. Got into a little bit about Dr. Fauci and his comments about sports. So we covered all of that with Don. It's been a rough week, I got to say. This was a hard one to do, just because I feel like the focus right now is on everything that's bad and in sports. You have, like I said, the Corona is going crazy. People don't want to wear masks. Novak Djokovic, just a complete dope, hosting a party. The Bubba Wallace situation with people just reacting in a horrific way, as usual. Just horrible people fighting about things constantly on Twitter. Got to stay away from Twitter. That's really what the point is. So I tried to pull it together. I apologize. But Don was great, and I'm really looking forward to the decision. I think that's going to be interesting. Everyone sort of has their feelings on LeBron, so I think a lot of people are going to watch. I think it'll do well for ESPN, and will be a good watch. If you missed any previous episodes of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, go into the archives. Please check them out. Andrew Marchand from the New York Post was on last week, along with Arash Markazi from the LA Times. Arash gave us a little scene setter from Las Vegas, where he was for about a week, maybe 10 days. And then, of course, you know, we're seeing things happening there with Corona. So it was a great update from Arash there. And Andrew Marchand and I went through some sports media news that's going on. Nate Burleson was on the pod 2 weeks ago. Aaron Andrews 3 weeks ago. So check those out. Download, listen, subscribe, rate, review. It's all appreciated. You have nothing to do right now. You have nothing but time in your hands. So download and rate and subscribe. Make me very happy. Get me out of my funk. All right. I got out of it, though, for Don Van Natta. It's a good interview and a good podcast right here. So we're going to get right to it right now. Don Van Natta from ESPN on LeBron James, The Decision. Okay, joining me now, senior writer, best-selling author over at ESPN, and the host of Backstory, which I am looking very forward to this week because it covers LeBron James and The Decision. And he's Don Van Natta. Don, how are you?
Doing great, Jimmy. How are you?
Hanging in there. I got to be honest. I am looking very forward to Backstory, The Decision, this Sunday at 9 p.m. Very excited to talk to you about it. I think The Decision is one of those things that every sports fan still has some feelings about. But I got to say, just the overall just insanity of this week, I was like, you know, I don't even want to tape a podcast this week. I cannot believe this, what's going on in the sports world this week with, you know, you have all these cases of Corona popping up. And then, of course, you have to deal with Corona truthers who say it's not a big deal because, you know, like, who cares if people get it? Totally not factoring in that it could spread and then old people can die, and somehow, you know, old people are allowed to just go and no, it's not a big deal. Novak Djokovic was having his stupid party, and then you have the whole Bubba Wall. I mean, this has been, I don't know if you feel this way. I was curious because I was like, oh, Don's a good, whoever I had on this week, I won't be like, are they having as rough a time dealing with this week as I am?
Absolutely. It's hitting me. We have 5,500 cases today in Florida. I live in Miami, and every day it goes up. It spirals upward. And I was in Naples this weekend, and almost everywhere I looked, you know, the mask on, I'm social distancing, I'm being very careful. People running around without masks. And people are not taking it seriously. All the things you said, I mean, to equate this with the sniffles, as we've heard, is ridiculous and outrageous. So yeah, it's been tough. Look, we're all sick of it, but because we're sick of it, to sort of wave the victory flag over something that clearly is got a lot of kick in its engine, it seems insane to me.
And the crazy thing, so you're in Miami, where in Florida, it's really getting bad. And I'm here in New York, where we went through our roughest patch, and we're on a really good downslope with it. And that was even after having, you know, massive protests, and which I think sort of shows that You're much safer outside than inside, but I'm not a scientist, so you know, it's just my own opinion. But the fact that our numbers have still gone down, even after we've had the protests go on, I think, and most of the people here, if you're in New York and you see the footage, most people are wearing masks. The masks are obviously the key. And then, but for some reason, you have this portion of the country who thinks the masks are just infringing on their rights. It's like where I am too. I'm on Long Island. On Long Island, people get mad if you say either one. So I don't even know which one is the correct one anymore. But we're in phase three now, where restaurants are opening. We have the barbershops open. Nail salons are open for people who want to do that. The stores are now, you know, the retail stores, Best Buy, et cetera, that stuff's open. So like we're opening up and our numbers are great, but you go on Twitter and it's like every 5 minutes, it's like Florida this, Texas this, Arizona this. And now we're starting with the players, you know, Charlie Blackman of the Rockies, and, you know, Von Miller had it, and I've heard he's still struggling with it. And the golf now today on Wednesday, the golf is, and like I said, I mentioned Djokovic. It's just amazing that all you need to do is wear a mask, and instead people are putting ourselves in this position.
Yeah, and Jimmy, it's not a coincidence that the 20 states that have all spiked in the last couple of weeks are the states that basically opened up over Memorial Day weekend. I mean, I think we're seeing the consequences of that in Florida, Texas, Arizona, places where the mask wearing has not been taken seriously, nearly seriously enough, of course. And I keep thinking about Arizona too. Remember, if Rob Manfred had his way, we would have had baseball around now in Arizona. Remember, that was a plan just a couple of months ago. Right. And Arizona is spiraling. And you can imagine if that plan had taken root and that would have happened, you know, how awful that would have been for MLB. It probably would have no season. So, you know, that elongated process probably worked to MLB's advantage. But I don't believe we're going to see baseball. I really don't. I don't want to be so cynical. I love baseball. Mm. But, you know, it, until that first pitch is thrown on July 23rd or July 24th, I'm not going to believe that baseball is back, because it's going to be just so difficult for, you know, to travel, and particularly in the West, the West Coast teams, the teams, you know, beyond the Mississippi, they've got to travel a lot. And even just with 60 games, that's a lot of risk taking that's going to be done in a very short period of time.
And it's interesting because, in my opinion, and I'd love to get into this for a little bit, just for, you know, I think baseball can be okay because it's going to be outside. And I think baseball is a sport where the players don't need to be on top of each other. Now, the NBA, they're going to be indoors.
Yeah.
And they're sweating all over each other for 2.5 hours. I think the NBA is the one that's going to have the bigger issues.
No, you could be right. You're probably right. Yes, it's close quarters. They're hunkered down in one place. And of course, the support staff are not going to be quarantined, from what I understand, right? They're going to be out in the community, and they're going to be in the community. As we've been talking about, Florida is spiraling with 5,500 new cases just today on Wednesday. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think the NBA probably the odds are much tougher for the NBA to get through the whole thing. But even baseball, I just think that, you know, I saw somebody use the verb bull rush for the NFL. The NFL is trying to bull rush through COVID. I think all the major sports are trying to do that. I think it's a great verb that describes it. And, you know, fingers crossed, but the odds are really steep that we're going to get through any of these seasons.
It's funny you say that, because here we are talking about, you know, you mentioned MLB, I mentioned NBA, and the NFL has seemed to basically been the one league that's been able to skate through COVID pretty, you know, their draft got into, you know, weren't able to have the draft in Vegas, but then they put it on TV and ESPN had bonkers ratings for it. And they've been able to really, I think, fly under the radar. And who knows what's going to happen with the NFL, but I said this, I think I said this on the podcast last week with Andrew Marshall, maybe. The one that I shouldn't say that no one's talking about, that's not true. The one that's getting, I think, the least amount of attention, that will end up being the most fascinating one in all of this, will be college football, because of the differences in every state. I mean, I think that if Alabama played a football game today, 80,000 fans would show up without masks and be ready to go.
Yes, for sure.
And I won't make any other derogatory statements about the people in Alabama. But then, you know, you have states like you mentioned where, you know, Texas, you know, are where they're now, you know, the governor there is basically telling everyone they need to wear a mask. So I don't know what college football, I think, is the one where we as a collective, you know, I hate the media, but the media is sort of, we're so focused, I think, on MLB and NBA and NFL. I think college is going to be a complete shit show.
Absolutely. It will be. And, yeah. You know, I don't know how a place like a single college, if it has a team that has an issue in the Big Ten, you're hypothetical, Michigan has a problem. A lot of players have COVID. What happens to the Big Ten if they're trying to play through with just a single team? It's running through. And the previous week, you know, they had played Penn State. You know, what happens? You got to shut it down. And you're going to have, obviously, you know, some regionalism plays into this. College football, I'll be stunned if we see anything close to normalcy. I've heard Paul Feinbaum's, you know, quite cynically say he just doesn't think we're going to have anything close to a normal season. You'll have a lot of leagues that are just maybe have abbreviated games and then give up or not play games at all. Because of course every college is approaching it differently. I've got two daughters in college. My youngest daughter is going to Fordham as a freshman. Fordham is dealing with it differently than my oldest daughter who goes to Boston University, her university. So in how they're planning for the fall. So every school is different. Every conference is going to be different. And I agree with you, Jimmy. It has sort of flown under the radar screen of what college football is going to be like, but more likely than not, we're not going to see too many college football games this fall, unfortunately.
I mean, I can see the SEC playing their own sort of conference and tournament, and no one else playing at this point.
Yes, that's the most likely thing. Absolutely, yeah. The SEC will bull rush through the way the NFL is trying to bull rush through COVID. And remember, you know, there was all this discussion, the summer is going to be better, right? Things are going to turn around once we get out of the winter and spring months, and half the country is spiking as we're heading toward July 4th, which is just I think to get to your first question, Jimmy, that's why I'm feeling like you. I mean, it's depressing, like enough already. Like this is supposed to be the lull and it's this bad. Like, what's it going to be like in October and November?
But what's depressing, Matt, for me is the reaction of people who don't want to wear masks because of their quote unquote freedoms, or, you know, the video, the constant barrage of videos of an old guy pushing a worker at Walmart out of his way to get into the store without a mask. I mean, this is what, and people, you know, Novak Djokovic, who doesn't believe in vaccines, which, okay, fine. But then he has to have a party with nobody wearing masks. I mean, the stupidity and the ignorance, it wears you down when it's constant, nonstop, every day.
And even Dr. Fauci, who you cannot create, if you were a fiction writer, a more benign figure, right? A guy who just wants to help people be healthy. That's why he's here. He's been doing it since the Reagan administration. There's a target on him. People can't stand him. They don't want to, a lot of people in this country, they don't want to hear anything he has to say. And all he's doing is trying to help us.
Well, I'm sort of in that category now. He lost me recently. I think he is, like, I think he's very benign. I think he has nothing but good intentions. I think he wants to do the right thing. And my issue with him is, I think he should. His problem is that Trump cut him off, so now we don't see Fauci at briefings.
Yep.
And my only issue with Fauci really is I think he should stop the interviews or get. The flip-flopping, and it might not even be flip-flopping, because listen, like, people got on him because in March he said you don't need masks, you know, but wear gloves because it could come from surfaces. Now, I believe that was his honest assessment, and in then researching more about corona, things changed. They learned different things, and then it became about the mask. That is a legitimate, I have no issue with this. My issue with Fauci is, you know, he does an interview with one sports outlet, and it's you know, football, no problem. Then it's football can't happen. Baseball should. My issue with Fauci specifically about the sports things, he's been all over the map with it. And I want to hear Fauci about corona and what we need to do about the coronavirus. His opinions on the sports stuff, I would, less interviews might be better for him.
There has been some mixed messaging. Look, there's been mixed messaging from the administration all over the map, and that's a big problem, right? I mean,
right. Well, there's no leadership. There's no leadership.
Right. And I hear you on Fauci. He has contradicted himself, but it certainly seems lately he's been more consistent just with his cynicism and with his warnings about whether we'll have football or not, whether Major League Baseball can play in October. It's been more of a drumbeat of doom when it comes to sports from Fauci, at least from what I've heard in the last couple of weeks, Jimmy. And yeah. A lot of people in this country don't want to hear that. So sports fans have certainly turned on him, or many of them across the country. And again, my view of him, as you say, he's got the best intentions. Has he been a perfect communicator? No. But as he's learned information too, you know, he's certainly the voice of cynicism from the administration when there's very few of those. I think we can agree on that. You know, it's
yeah, absolutely. And I think part of the problem is that I think the guy should be on TV every day, even if it's just for 10 minutes, giving us a corona update. And then maybe that would sort of then take him off some of the interviews where then we get some contradictions. You know, yeah. I think he's great from the same, like, when it comes to the virus, what we need to do, then he was saying at one point, he said he's not sure there would be a second wave. It's the speculation, I guess, that yes. I have, you know, he came out once and said, we may never shake hands again. That's the stuff I would maybe pull back on and stick to just the facts of the virus. But I don't think it's a malicious thing on his part. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he can't go out there and say what he wants to say. And, you know, and then he ends up doing these interviews, and he's doing so many of these sports interviews. He's on every single platform, it seems like. And it might be just like a less is more situation.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think the mixed messaging has certainly rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And he doesn't say no to an interview. He's everywhere. and he does. You're right, Jimmy. He will speculate. If he's asked, well, do you think there should be Major League Baseball in October? He says no. There's really no filter sometimes with him, right? And so, yeah, it's frustrating for sports fans to hear those kinds of projections. But all I mean to say is, you know, his job is to get us through this. And I think we sometimes forget that because certain things he says, we just don't want to hear in the moment.
And again, not his fault, but if he does an interview and says, you know, he doesn't think baseball gets through October, the sport fan then in their head says, okay, well then what about the NFL? Because the NFL is being played in October. So now there's no baseball. There's no, you know, it just leads to more sort of anarchy, I think, when he does that stuff. But again, I think he's extremely well-intentioned. I think it's just sort of a media PR issue that, you know, it'd be nice if they can get it straightened out. But, of course, he can't because his boss is a lunatic. I mean, it's just the way it goes. I'm just curious. I don't want to get into a whole thing about Bubba Wallace because I just, at this point, no one listens and everyone sort of. But I'm just curious from your standpoint because, I mean, you're an investigative reporter. That is your title. You're an investigative reporter. So for you, everything is about facts. That's what it's all about, facts. And with me, with this story, the fact that it's being spun that he's a Jesse Smollett or whatever, that guy, you know, and the implication that he was the one who reported, he didn't report anything. He had nothing to do. And there are people who refuse to just deal with the facts, which is he did not report this. He did not start this investigation. This was not his doing. And now he's getting the blowback. When you see this, I can't imagine. I mean, for me, it makes me like it makes me want to not do work. It makes me want to just go away. For someone like you, whose whole job is based around investigative reporting, I can't imagine what the frustrations you go through when you see this nonsense.
It is. It's extremely frustrating because, as you say, when on Sunday night, it was announced there was going to be an investigation. Immediately, I noticed on social media channels, particularly on Twitter, there were people that said, well, it absolutely has to be a noose because of the history with NASCAR and everything else. And then you had a lot of other people that immediately said, oh, no, it's absolutely a Smollett situation, right? It was one or the other. People were siloed immediately. And looking at it, it's like, wait a minute, there's going to be closed circuit television. There's going to be an investigation that's going to find the facts. Let's not jump to the conclusions. And what often happens is, you know, Jimmy, within a minute or two, people make up their minds with no facts whatsoever. And this is a perfect example of it. All they know is an investigation of something, of an object and how it got there. And they instantly make up their mind about what it is. They, for 24, 48 hours, keep banging that drum. And then when we find out what the result is, the people that were right are going to say all the people that were wrong had all of these horrible motives. And it's always about my hot take being right or your hot take being right or wrong. And that's where all of these arguments are about. And so as an investigative reporter, yeah, I mean, you deal with facts. Let's wait to see what the facts are and move forward from there. And we so rarely do that in this country. And as you know, we rarely click the stories. People don't read the stories. They read the headlines. They react to the hot takes on Twitter. Very, very few people click through and read every word of a long form story that delves deeply into some subject to try to understand it. And we bring our biases to it.
I don't even think it's about my take is right, my take is wrong. I think it's just about how much attention can I get.
I've got a phone ringing here. Let me just.
That's okay. Let it ring.
Yeah, I'm not going to answer it. Just give me 1 second. All right.
Is it LeBron wanting to see how bad the decision, how bad backstory is going to be?
No. Okay. Say that again, Jimmy, because you make a good point. Yeah. It is hot. It is the sort of.
It's not even I don't think people care if their take is right. They just want the attention for the take.
Oh yeah. No, absolutely. It's certainly about getting attention and building your brand and yelling the loudest and right. getting the most right. followers and likes and clicks and all of that. But you know, let's feel really good that this is not what it was thought to be Sunday night. Right. This is actually wonderful news that should be celebrated. And instead, the wonderful news becomes this sort of venue for a lot more yelling and screaming and questioning people's intentions and motives. I saw my colleague, Will Kane, coming down very, very hard on journalists and the media and saying, we don't deal with most of us. I hope he doesn't include me in that category, but he might. He's like, most of us in the media don't deal with facts. Well, actually, some of us do. Some of us do actually spend a lot of time, being meticulous and trying to find out what the truth is and what the facts are, and don't jump to instant conclusions. Which sometimes Will does. It's frustrating. It's frustrating to be a journalist in this day and age when the noise surrounding any story that you are trying to report. Often eclipses any of the facts that you find out about.
Right. Well, this spins into a whole, that take by Will Kane, I think, is a little bit ridiculous in terms of journalists do deal in. I think what happens is, I think journalists, when you're writing for ESPN, you're on ESPN TV, you're writing for Sports Illustrated, they all 100% deal in facts. But then people go on Twitter, throw out opinions, and maybe that's what Will has the issue with. But to say that journalists aren't dealing in facts, I think is a little bit of a stretch, because if ESPN or SI published something that was factually wrong, we would catch hell for it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jimmy, I lost you for a second. You have to say that again.
Will's point, which I think is a little bit absurd, is to say journalists don't deal in facts doesn't make sense, because I think he's going by Twitter. If you're, again, on ESPN television, you're writing for ESPN.com, SportsIllustrated.com, we deal in facts. If we don't, we lose our jobs, basically. So yes. To say that journalists aren't dealing in facts is absurd. He's probably, I'm sure, speaking about opinions that people throw out on Twitter, which, again, not the same thing as the real world, in my opinion.
So, no, it's not. Twitter's not the real world. It is a, funhouse mirror is my favorite metaphor for what Twitter mm-hmm. is. And all of us in sports media and in the mainstream media spend far too much time on there, because, most of our readers and most of our viewers and listeners, they're not on Twitter. We're oftentimes talking to ourselves and trying to make ourselves laugh. At a funny joke we tell. I mean, I often say it's like we're all trying to, get a job in John Oliver's writer's room, with how funny we are on Twitter. And I'm guilty of it. Believe me, I do it too.
We all
do that. But I mean, it's a time suck. And I think you're right. I think, to be fair to Will, he was referring probably more to the space he's in, the hot take people that jump to conclusions. But he said the media. I mean, the media covers a lot of ground, and he made it sound as if almost everybody in the media doesn't deal in facts, which
What didn't the media? I mean, NASCAR came out and said there was an investigation. That's not the media's doing. That's NASCAR right. coming out with a statement. But enough about that. Let's get to the decision, because like I said, that topic frustrates me. Speaking of Twitter, I think Twitter will have a lot of fun on Sunday night, this Sunday, June 28th, 9 p.m. ESPN. Backstory, the decision, which you will host. And well, it's the 10-year anniversary, so I know that's the reason for doing it now. I'm just curious about a couple things with the show. Is LeBron involved in the show at all?
No, LeBron declined our invitation to sit down for an interview, right. as did his business partner, Maverick Carter, as did his agent, Rich Paul, his chief of staff, Randy Mims, all four of those guys who I would have loved to sat down and talk with, not just about the show, but about its legacy. Right. None of those guys agreed to do it, but we did talk to people around LeBron, people in his camp, people inside his inner circle. And so, they helped inform the reporting for sure of what you'll see on Sunday night.
Why do you, I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you think LeBron and the people close to him passed? Are they embarrassed by it? Do they not want to talk about it? What do you think is the reason there?
Well, I think there's multiple reasons, Jimmy. I think certainly it was probably the worst public moment of LeBron James's life. So why revisit it with an investigative reporter who's going to ask you any question that I could think of? He doesn't have to do it, and he chose not to. But we make the point in the episode that LeBron now is his own storyteller. He's an executive producer of his own shows through his media companies and his production company, Spring Hill Entertainment and Uninterrupted. And 2 years ago on More Than an Athlete, which is on ESPN Plus, which LeBron sold to ESPN, he sat with those guys, watched a clip of the decision, talked about it very frankly and openly about what that experience was like for him, how horrible the experience was. So when I came calling last year to sit down with him and the guys around him, they felt like, well, we've already done this. We already talked about it on our own show, on our own terms. So why should we do it? So we kind of lean into that in the episode of Backstory. You know, oftentimes when people say no to you and you don't get access, it's not necessarily, well, it's most of the time not a good thing. But in this particular case for the storytelling, Jimmy, you know, we're showing that LeBron doesn't need us anymore. And a lot of star athletes don't. And access, there's less and less access to star athletes. There's less and less access to politicians and all sorts of fields and business and everything else. It's harder for journalists to get people that they need to sit down with them and do interviews. And LeBron really doesn't need us anymore. Yes, he talks at the locker after every game, but he's not sitting down, you know, doing interviews that he doesn't want to do anymore. And he conveniently has the mechanisms to do his own stories and sell them to the multiple platforms and networks that are out there vying for stories that he now produces. And we draw the through line from the decision to LeBron and Uninterrupted and his storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Is it? Yeah, because I do feel like, listen, I feel like every single NBA fan, you hear LeBron James and you will think of the decision at some point, but I think we've, you know, listen, time heals all wounds. He's won titles. He's built schools. He's become, you know, I think the story of LeBron is just phenomenal. What he does off the court, on the court. So I think we've reached the point.
Completely agree, by the way, Jimmy. I don't mean to interrupt you. Completely agree with you. Yeah, no, absolutely. It is. And that's another aspect of the story that people will see Sunday night is also LeBron's voice. Just how he has found his voice, how outspoken he is on issues, social issues, issues of race, politics. He's the most outspoken and I believe most influential American athlete. And it's a very different voice, obviously, than we heard 10 years ago when he said, I'm taking my talents to South Beach. And how that evolved, partly through these storytelling mechanisms that I talked about, but also how he's been able to do that is a fascinating subject. I completely agree with everything you said, for sure.
You know, and in looking at it, 10 million people watched the decision. So that's why also it's always going to be this. But what I was going to say is I think while anyone who ever thinks of LeBron James, the decision is there. I think it's sort of like, you know, the 15th thing on the list of things we think about with LeBron. So it would be good to see him come out and have a laugh about how ridiculous the whole thing was. Tell me and the listeners, will we learn anything new? How much new stuff will there be anything in Backstory where we're like, oh, wow, that is kind of mind blowing.
Well, I hope so. Yeah. I think so. The first segment of the show, we go into the origin story. So one of the questions I had when we decided to do this was, whose idea was this thing?
Right.
You know, and I assumed it was LeBron or Maverick Carter's or, you know, maybe ESPN people. There was some reporting that Ari Emanuel, the Hollywood agent, or Jim Gray had come up with the idea. Actually, the origin story has nothing to do with any of those people. And it goes back much further than I think people know. And so I don't necessarily want to give it away, Jimmy. I want people to tune in.
Yeah.
But it goes back to November of 2009. It's a very unlikely source that had the idea. And then Bill Simmons plays a very interesting role that people, I don't think people realize as well, that we take you through that. So the origin story is interesting. The other thing that really surprised me is David Stern. It's known that David Stern was not thrilled about ESPN doing the decision, but I had John Skipper, who greenlit the decision when he was head of content at ESPN before he became president, tell me on camera that David Stern indicated to him that he was livid about the show. And the reason why he was so mad is because it was a network giving too much control to a single player. So that surprised me, and that was really what was Stern's incentive in trying to get the show killed. And of course, ESPN didn't do that, which is just in itself kind of mind-boggling that a business partner commissioner would be sort of that opinion would be discarded by the network. The other thing that I really found interesting, and I didn't know until I did this reporting, is how much tension there was. I knew about the tension at ESPN between the journalists and the entertainment side, and we do delve into that in the show, but I didn't realize the tension that existed inside LeBron's camp over whether the decision was a good idea or not. And and so Leon Rose, who was LeBron's agent at the time before Rich Paul took over that job in 2012, and World Wide West, who was at the time LeBron's very close advisor, soured on the idea in the days leading up to the decision and were warning people, this is not a good idea. This could backfire on LeBron. And those warnings were ignored and rejected by Maverick Carter and the other people in LeBron's camp. And so that really I found interesting and kind of surprising. Look, Maverick Carter, to be fair to him, knew this was risky. He felt it was worth the risks. He felt the what LeBron would get out of this in blowing up even bigger and really being a first step into this new space of potentially beginning a media company and a production company someday. That's the ball that Maverick had his eye on and felt it was worth the risk is really interesting. And of course, just, you know, as you said, what a shit show the whole thing was, really could have blown up those guys, because, you know, LeBron was a villain for a year in every NBA arena, and Maverick thought he had ruined the image of his best friend, and yet it actually made those guys even closer. That's another thing I think that's really I didn't know going into the reporting.
It's funny because, well, first of all, you sold me good, because I'm curious to see the Bill Simmons angle on this and the David Stern stuff. But it's funny because the decision is what gets trashed by everyone too, but there was that just over the top introductory, it wasn't even a press conference, with the heat, with the music, and that was the decision was sort of like, you know, it's like a scene from like Sopranos or Goodfellas where they kill someone and then for good measure they shoot him again about 10 times. That was what whole deal was.
Jimmy, that's a great point. So yeah, you have the decision. You have, I'm taking my talents to South Beach, that excruciating 28 minutes, right? All those questions by Jim Gray. Did you bring the powder? Are you a nail biter? Right? Going on and on and on. He asked 23 questions before we heard, what's your decision? And so that was excruciating. And then the next night, LeBron's on stage at the American Airlines Arena with D-Wade and Chris Bosh. And he's asked, how many championships are you going to win? Not one, not two, not three, not four, not five. And I think nationally, it was just 24 hours of, what is this guy doing? Like he puts together this super team, rubs his hometown's noses in it the first night. And then the second night is predicting with this team that he put together that he's going to just win, you know, every year. And you could see Pat Riley on the video as LeBron saying, not five, not six, not seven, kind of cringing. Like Pat Riley knows it ain't easy to win one. you're promising eight, you know, to the fans of Miami. Like, come on. So yeah, and you know, we delve into that, the building of super teams, you know, what that meant. I mean, obviously LeBron is a trailblazer for that and the way that team was put together. But that was a big reason why there was such a backlash against LeBron, not just that first night, but that second night. So it's a good point.
Let me put you on the spot here and ask you a little bit of a tough one. Were there any issues in doing this in terms of covering the ESPN part of this? Because you just said a minute ago about the first, you know, he didn't make the announcement for 28 minutes. Now, for me personally, when I hear that, to me, that's ESPN doing that. They're setting up the TV show, dragging it out, making people wait. And, you know, ESPN caught some backlash as well as LeBron for the decision. Was it hard to navigate sort of the ESPN angle while you did backstory on this?
Well, it's always challenging when you're turning the spotlight on your colleagues or your former colleagues. I had to do that a couple times when I was at the New York Times. It's always uncomfortable. But I have to say that, you know, the people at the network that I wanted to interview about this, you know, made themselves available. I interviewed John Skipper on camera, Keith Klinkscales, a former executive who was the point person at the network for the LeBron group on the decision, sat down with me. He was the first interview we did, actually, a little over a year ago. And then Vince Doria, who was the head of the news division, who retired in 2015, he also sat down and talked about the tensions inside the news division of trying to cover an event that the entertainment side, you know, had every interest in letting LeBron break the story versus the NBA insiders. So I think we're pretty, you know, fair but tough on ESPN. And I think that I hope that the audience will find that, you know, we're down the middle and the issues that occurred at that time at the network are covered in depth. Now, I will tell you, Jimmy, one disappointment was Jim Gray declined to talk with me. We tried. We ran at him multiple times. I really wanted to sit down with him and ask him questions about those 23 questions and the way it was handled and everything else. We have some reporting about that that we have in the show, but he would not sit down with me, unfortunately.
Did he give you a reason why? Any reason why he wouldn't sit down with you?
No, you know, he didn't. He never responded to my reaching out to him. He did speak briefly to our showrunner, Robert Abbott, a great documentary filmmaker in his own right and a co-founder of E60, and just said he just didn't want to have anything to do with the project. So that is a regret that we couldn't sit down with Gray and hear his side of the story.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because this was going to be my last question before we wrap. I'd love a spoiler. If you don't want to give a spoiler, I totally understand. I'm really looking forward to seeing the Skipper part and the Vince Doria part there about how this went down with ESPN News versus ESPN Entertainment. But if you can tell us, if you can't, you want to save it for Sunday, I understand. How did Jim Gray become the host? Was that LeBron's pick? Was that ESPN's pick? How did that happen?
Oh, no, I don't mind discussing that. So this is interesting. This was Maverick Carter's pick. So one of the things that we talk about in the show is this was really a Maverick Carter production. The cameras belonged to ESPN. The satellite uplink did. But Maverick and LeBron, by extension, but really Maverick was calling the shots. And Jim Gray was not wanted by ESPN. ESPN wanted one of its own hosts to do it, either the late, great Stuart Scott or Bob Lee. And instead, the LeBron camp and mostly Maverick insisted it be Jim Gray. And so it was Jim Gray. So, you know, that's kind of interesting.
I mean, that would be amazing if that happened today, because that would leak.
Yes.
And then you have all the people, you know, the Richard Deitches, the Ben Strausses, the Andrew Marchands, but everyone would be ripping ESPN to shreds for letting Maverick Carter dictate who's the host of that. Sort of probably 10 years ago when social media wasn't what it is now, they got away with it. But that would not probably fly today.
No, that's probably true. But and look, the interview with Skipper is quite candid. I'm really proud of that interview. Skipper sat down with me, and I think is quite revealing about what the incentives and motives that ESPN had to do the show. This was 1 hour of network time that was donated to LeBron James. The LeBron James Family Foundation made a $2 million contribution, I found, in its tax returns to the Boys and Girls Clubs of America. So ESPN made no money on that 1 hour. The money that the network made was on, you know, the bumper programming, the 3 hour pre-show and the two-hour post-show. And Skipper's very open about that. I ask him in the backstory episode, Jimmy, I say, did ESPN use LeBron or did LeBron use ESPN? And he said it was mutual use. And so
right, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I was very happy to be able to, you know, sit down with him and get him to talk about what the motives were and why ESPN decided to do it, including allowing the LeBron camp to pick the host that was going to ask the questions on its air.
Well, I get why ESPN did it and did it for no money, because then they are in the good graces and get access to the greatest athlete in the entire world, who was the greatest athlete in the entire world 10 years ago and is today. And, you know, when you need him to do something, then you have access to him. So I get it from that standpoint. I think, though, when you let him pick the host, that's where it gets a little dicey. But I guess you can't do the show unless he gets to pick the host. So
yeah, and you know what you're saying about the access, that's arguable. That's not, by the way, what Skipper or Klingscales or Doria told
me. I'm sure they would.
But the answer, though, that Skipper does give on that, because I asked him that question, you know, from a business standpoint, why would you do this with this arrangement of donating the hour? His answer on that, I'll let viewers find out, but it's quite revealing. It's not about right. future access, but more about that moment and what was in it for ESPN at that moment.
Gotcha. I look forward to that. I look forward to the whole show. Backstory: The Decision this Sunday, 9 p.m. ESPN. ESPN's had no sports. It's been a documentary fest for the last couple of months here. So I'm sure this will be a good one. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for coming on and spending a little time here. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jimmy. Enjoyed it.
Take care. Be well. All right. My thanks to Don Van Atta. Enjoyed the conversation a lot. Looking forward, like I said, to Backstory of the Decision on Sunday night. I think that'll be a good distraction that we all need. And, you know, we'll see how LeBron comes off. I know people already have their mind made up about him. I think he's great. Best player. Great guy off the court. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens here with The Decision. Interesting, though, that he won't be on it. So my thanks to Don Van Natta for this episode. Past episodes, in case you've missed them, in the archives. Last week, Andrew Marchand of the New York Post was on to discuss a variety of topics in sports media. Rush Markazi was also on to talk about the reopening of Las Vegas. 2 weeks ago, Nate Burleson. 3 weeks ago, Aaron Andrews. All in the archives, so check them out. Download and subscribe to the podcast. All right, that wraps it up for this edition. Stay safe. We'll see you next week. Take care.